You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Pucks with Hags is powered by Prize Picks, the exclusive daily fantasy partner of the CLNS Media Network.
Welcome to another edition of the Pucks with Hags podcast. As always, I'm your host, Joe Haggerty. You find my work at joehaggerty.substack.com. Sign up for a premium membership. You get all my NHL and Bruins writing sent straight directly to your inbox. I also write for bostonsportsjournal.com. File columns after every single game. Work with some very talented people like Mike Giardi, Greg Bedard. Great place. I believe this is a 75th episode of the Pucks with Hags podcast, powered by Prize Picks, the exclusive daily fantasy partner of the CLNS Network. With me today, New England Hockey Journal's Evan Marinofsky. Also, you may see him on Nesson from time to time. I saw him enjoying an adult beverage on the concourse with buddies at the Hockey's Championships last night. Evan, how was it? You have fun at the Garden last night, and what was your night like after that? Did you go to the Harp or something? What would you
do? You know what's funny? Like, I think if it was a couple years ago, we probably would have stood in that Harp line. But, you know, my friends and I, you know, we went out before, got some dinner at, we thought at 5:30, because we were Ubering in at 5:30, and we're like, oh, 2 hours before the game, banners wide open. I mean, we'll get to watch the March Madness games.
Yep.
Whatever. We go up there. Everyone's walking back down the stairs because they're not letting anybody in.
Oh, my God.
It was a madhouse down there. But it was good. And then after, we went to Porter's and watched some of the March Madness games. And it was chill. I liked it. There was no line. So there wasn't all the college kids there. So it was fun. And you know what I got, Hags? I saw this in the pro shop, and I wanted some Hockey East merch, and it was only $20, and I was like, you know what, give me the Hockey East chain.
You got one of those like Will Davis had around Will Smith had around his neck last night.
Give me the Hockey East chain, so I'll wear it for the rest of the episode. But it was so I get my money's worth. But it was funny. I saw Freddie Meyer from Rivers, and he had two adult beverages in his hand, and he's like, oh my God. Like, I'm telling your boss that you're drinking here. I'm like, well, I'm not covering it. I can. And I'm like, don't mind this. This is just my Hockey East chain. So
you actually wearing it last night?
Oh yeah. You get me? If I'm buying this, I'm wearing it.
Oh, so that's awesome.
It was the only piece of Hockey East merch. And it was so funny. The shelves were full of them because obviously nobody was buying it.
Yeah.
But me and my buddy were like, we're getting the chain, you know, like we had to get it. So
that's great. They're, I mean, the kids love the chains. I got to be honest. A lot of it has to do with like, you know, the youth hockey post game, like player of the game, like hustle thing where they get the chain. So they see those now in the pro shops, and they do, if it's on a chain and it's got a logo on it, they want it. So it's I salute you. That's not I give you a lot of props for wearing that at the game last night and walking around.
Well, I like that this is not even a cool, it's just the logo. Like it's all Pastrnak's face or Brad Marchand's face. It's just the Styrofoam Hockey East logo.
That's it. So you're just representing Hockey East, and that's what it's all about.
I'm unbiased.
Let's also thank our sponsors before we get into it. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America and the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Instead of battling thousands of other players that could be pros or sharks, you simply pick more or less than on a two to six player stat projections and watch the winnings roll right in. For example, David Pastrnak, you can pick shots on net, you can pick goals, you can pick all kinds of different things. Charlie McAvoy block shots. Plus minus, do more or less. It's fun and pretty simple. Download the Prize Picks app today and use the code CLNS for a first-time deposit match of up to $100. That's download the Prize Picks app today and use the code CLNS for a first deposit match of up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Evan, just initial thoughts on the 3-2 loss to the Flyers yesterday. Bruins never led in that game. They gave up another goal in the last few minutes of the third period. I think it was like six shots on net or seven shots on net in the second and the third period. Not a 20 shots on net overall. Not a very impressive effort. One shot on net apiece, I think, for Marchand and Pasternak. It just seems like, you know, they're kind of in cruise control right now. And this was one of those games that you could throw into the mix of, you know, they show up, but they don't really show up, you know, kind of counting down to the playoffs.
Yeah, I think that was my biggest thing as well. I was also disappointed in, you know, you have some really nice goals at the end of the game with Brazeau.
Yeah.
And you have, you know, some great passing from Morgan Geekie and Jake DeBrusk on the Danton Heinen goal. And then you immediately let one up each time. And I think that's where it's really disappointing, is it's like you have these good plays by bottom six players, or even middle six.
And those are killers in the playoffs. When you score the goal and then you let somebody come right back down and score on you, those will kill you in the postseason.
Especially on the road. And I think that is, you know, and again, it's a late March 1 p.m. game in Philly on a Saturday. So, you know, it's not everything. You know, the sky's not falling, but it is disappointing that you have those nice plays, you have those kind of momentum swings, and then they go the other way. And I know Omark had some really nice saves throughout the game. You know, he made some terrific stops. But, you know, those final two goals, it's like, all right, like, you should probably have one of them at least. And that's, I think that was another element where it's like, you need the timely save. And he, you know, again, it's one game, but you need the timely save, especially after those momentum shifting goals.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, the Bruins have been getting the timely saves from both Allmark and Swayman all year long. And it seems like lately they're not so much getting those. And that is another, what we've seen this in the playoffs before, where all of a sudden they're like superior in their lead all year. And then in the postseason, it's a different story. And I think that's less of the narrative right now on Swayman, because he hasn't really been given as many chances in the postseason as Allmark has. But I do think that's the narrative on Allmark until he changes the story and changes that narrative and changes it by playing in a different way in the postseason. That being said, that last goal that Forster scored the game winner, I'm not going to blame Omark for that one. I think that was just like top corner snipe. It looked like, I couldn't tell if it hit, was it Carlo's stick maybe, I think, that was defending him, whoever the defender was.
Carlo kept him to the outside.
You know, there was a stick right in there and a body right in there. So, that, you know, there was some stuff going on there, but like that was a pretty good shot. So I'm going to blame Omark a little less on that one, but I think the general gist of what you're saying of you need a stop, and the goalies need to step up and make stops in these situations is absolutely spot on. Like, I totally agree. And they haven't as much lately, and that's why they're losing some of these games. I liked Brazeau now, 4 goals in 3 games. Another sort of big man's goal where he kind of, you know, curled around the goalie and scored. He really, like, he's been a pleasant surprise, obviously. I love that the naysayers out there, like the people, the Bruins draftnik prospect people, the self-anointed Bruins drafting prospect people that were saying he can't skate, he's too slow, like what are the Bruins doing, they've screwed up here, like what are they thinking. He's come up and shown not only that he can skate, but he can score goals around the net, and he is no misunderstanding about who and what he is. He plays classic big man game hockey, where he gets the puck down low, he has a couple of moves, JVR-esque, like backhand forehand in front of the net, wrap around, like curling around the goalie with his long reach and his stick. Like, he knows exactly what he needs to do to be effective around the net offensively, and he does it, and he wins a ton of battles along the goal line and below the goal line. He's big and strong and all that. That, you know, I continue to really like what I see out of him and think that, like, maybe he's going to give them a little something in the playoffs, given what he's doing down the stretch.
I agree. And I think what sets him apart is he's not just a big guy. You know, anybody can be 6'5", heavy and hard to play against. He has skill. He has good hands. And I think, you know, if you can be the net front guy, especially on that second power play unit, and you're not just screening the goalie, you're not just some, you know, lumberjack with a stick in his hands. Like, you can actually make moves and do, you know, do what he did yesterday or in Saturday's game. That's a whole nother ability unlocked. That's a whole nother thing you can do. And that, I think that optimizes him to be moved around the lineup. And he moved up yesterday or on Saturday with Coyle and Marchand. And I think that A, he deserves a look up there. But B, I think when everybody's healthy, I would love to see them try him on the third line. I know that they did it for like one game. It didn't really work with Geekie and Frederick. But I think I would, you know, towards the end of the season, you want to kind of iron things out. We've talked about this a lot, Hags. The bottom six is still kind of not up in the air, but you don't, it's not set in stone by any means.
Right.
And I would love to see Brazeau get some third line looks. And I think he has earned every bit of extra ice time he's gotten. And I think, you know, it comes from, as you said, playing a big man's game, winning a lot of board battles, good puck protection, but he's got some skill.
Yeah.
And that adds to that, you know? So he's a fascinating, that was a fascinating get by them, you know, and bringing him up and what he's been able to do. And I agree with you. I think come the playoffs, I think he will be a real asset because of all the things we just mentioned.
Yeah, and I think people assumed automatically that he was just going to be a fourth line guy. And when Pat Maroon comes back, like maybe he gets displaced by Pat Maroon, or it's going to be between those two who's going to stay in the lineup. And I do think, given the way he's played, he's opened up some combinations and some other things where he may be able to stay in even if Pat Maroon does come back. And it also gives the option of going with a fourth line if they move him up in the lineup of Boqvist, Beecher, and Lauko that's like super fast.
Mm-hmm.
And can be a little bit of a different look and have a different identity on a fourth line if you really just want to attack with a forecheck and speed as a fourth line unit and go after people. You know, I think that's another intriguing possibility as well. But I think given his play and given the fact that, you know, all year long they've had to place different people into that, you know, top line with Coyle and Marchand, whether it's Heinen, whether it's other people. Geeky, I think, has been there a little bit. Some other guys. But, like, I think putting Brazeau there would be really interesting, too, to leave him there for a little bit and see how he could do with them as a little bit of a different look as well. But I think just in general, really impressed with him, and I think he's sort of solidifying, A, that he's got a place and he should have a place given his skill set and his size and his strength. And B, like to your point that you made a little bit, the Bruins NHL advanced scouting staff and the pro scouting staff needs a lot of credit for finding guys like this, identifying them, believing they can, you know, make something out of them or help develop them into NHL players that can be useful in Boston. And Brazeau is absolutely an example of that, you know, and credit to the kid himself because he put in the work. He was at Warrior every day during the summertime. He lost weight. Like, he did what he needed to do due diligence wise on his end to get this chance. But they also saw something in him, just like they did with Parker Weatherspoon, just like they did with Jesper Boqvist, just like they did with
Pavel Saka,
Anthony Richard. Yes, absolutely. You know, there's a bunch of players that they've seen and liked, and they've been on the money with these players when they bring them in. So a lot of credit goes to them. Another guy that scored yesterday, Danton Heinen. I think that was his 14th goal of the season. He's getting up near 30 points now, making $775K on a minimum contract after coming in as a camp tryout. You know, the Bruins aren't really extending anybody right now. I think they're probably going to wait until after the season's over for any contract extensions at this point. But I think a guy like Heinen, as long as it's a pretty modest deal that he wants to agree to, has earned, an extension and the ability to stick around Boston for a few more years after this, given the way he's played. I think he's been great this season.
I agree. Sort of like their Brock Holt. Like, he just kind of fits in where you need him to fit. He can fill the role. Not going to wow you, but he's fine. And I think it's a testament to him. I mean, you think back to the beginning of the season, and I always say he was like the JV kid hanging around the varsity, hoping to get the call up. And then they finally sign him. And look, I mean, he has owned everything they put him into. How high is the ceiling? I think this is probably it, you know, filling in the top six.
No question. He's a fully formed NHL player at this point. He is what he is.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, but I think the fact that he's able to do that and at least be on your third line and be a contributing member, I think is definitely enough. And I'm curious to see what the market is for him in the offseason, because, again, they'll have some cap space. You wonder, I mean, I don't think a team would overpay for a guy like Danton Heinen just because you kind of know what he's going to be.
Yep.
I think he's definitely deserving of a raise. I think that's the biggest thing, and I think. But I would be curious to see if other teams would be intrigued by a guy like him and potentially overpay. I don't think so, because I don't think he's a rare commodity. But I think for what he, you know, I think he likes it here. I think, you know, Fitz Montgomery style, you know, they go back a ways. So I think this is the perfect place for him. And I mean, again, like we just mentioned, you know, Brazeau hasn't been up here long enough to be considered for it. But for the seventh player award, Heinen's the leader of the pack, really, I think. To me, it'd be like a Heinen or like a Morgan Geeky or Brandon Carlo. But, Brazeau could be in there as well. He just hasn't been playing long enough. But again, Heinen to me has just been, I mean, he's, He's exceeded every expectation I had for him this season. I would assume same for everybody else.
Yeah, no, I think Heinen would be a great choice for that. No question. You know, they usually give it now to like a young guy that has come up and sort of impressed, but I don't even know if there's anybody, you know, that I would put in that category.
If Patra played the full season, it probably would have been him.
Yeah, or Lowry. Like, if either one of those guys was up for the whole year, you could have looked at either one of them. But I do think Heinen's a guy that you look at and is really, like, you know, he's just done everything you could have wanted and more. I marvel at how much better he is now than he was when he was with them the first time around. How much more confident, how much more assertive he is at times. He doesn't defer to anybody else. Like, he knows when he should be taking the puck up the ice at certain points and not just, like, giving it up. Looking for his own offense at times, like, being a complete 200-foot player and playing in all zones. There's a lot of different stuff where when he left, he wasn't quite the effective player in all situations that he is now. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he was just as much of a factor consistently offensively as he is now. And that's a credit to his maturation. And I really think he's become a player that you want around because he can serve a bunch of different roles, play in different lines, do different things for you. And, you know, he's not going to hurt you offensively when he's out there. Like, he's adequate skill-wise, and he's going to be able to finish off enough plays to justify his spot in the lineup. So I do hope that he sticks around and that they give him a contract extension when the time comes.
Well, I also think with it, he's one last thing on Heinen that I think is interesting is, you know, you think about, he's a guy who wasn't signed over the offseason. Not to say his NHL career was near over, but nobody wanted him. And, you know, I think he kind of came into this as kind of screw it. Let's, you know, and I think that's where some of that confidence might come from of like, you know, I'm lucky to be here. I'm not going to defer, as you said, defer to anybody else. I'm a few years older. I've had some experiences. I'm going to coach I'm comfortable with. You know, I'm just going to go. And I think that sort of worked for him of just like, screw it. Like, I got nothing to lose. I'm on a veteran minimum deal. You know, I already wasn't signed. Yep. I'm just going to, you know, go all in for it. So, you know, credit to him.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's the way in the world, the way of the world in the NHL now, unfortunately, with like the middle class veteran guys, is that a lot of them have to sing for their supper in training camp and are, you know, put into that situation now just because of the cap. You know, they're signing top heavy contracts to the star players, and they're looking for guys on young guys on minimum contracts to fill the bottom of their roster. And then you end up getting a bunch of veterans like Heinen that have to do the same thing along with the young guys when they get sort of like stuck in the numbers game. But credit to him for making the most of his opportunity. The Pucks with Hags podcast is powered by Prize Picks, the exclusive daily fantasy partner of the CLNS Media Network. Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's the tournament season or the fight for playoff home court, it goes beyond the hockey that we're talking about. We're talking about basketball as well. There's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into some serious cash. And what better way to also pick players and go more or less than with some of the celebrity Prize Picks favorite players like Meek Mill and Sugar Sean O'Malley. You can now find community plays under the promos tab of the app to view entries from some of the biggest names in the Prize Picks community each week. So what I'm trying to tell you is this is a pretty cool daily fantasy sports app. It combines all kinds of different things with the sports and the fantasy that I just love getting involved with. And I've started hearing more about Prize Picks as of recently too. So this is something you want to hop on board with now. As I said before, it's fun and pretty simple. The app is easy to download. So download that Prize Picks app today and use the code CLNS for a first deposit match of up to $100. That's downloading the Prize Pick app and use the code CLNS for a first deposit match of up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. We're going to do a little bit of a mailbag here, Evan. Just answer some questions. DJ Radar JS11 on Twitter. I'm not going to call it X. I'm going to continue to call it Twitter. It has taken 3/4 of the season for Montgomery to recognize they don't shoot enough. If they did that on the power play and on 5-on-5, there would be no problem. Low key to post for wings. 1D goes side to side. 1D floats blue line, red line in case it goes the other way. Too much passing. And this was Jim Montgomery. This, I think, was sparked from what Jim Montgomery said the other day about his top power play unit, which has not given them a lot of power play goals lately. Montgomery said, I still don't think we have enough of a shot-first mindset, whether it's on the goal line, up at the point with Charlie McAvoy, or at the elbows. They all got to look to score. It seems really simple, but if you look at them a lot of times, they're looking like, what is my next play when they have the puck? They're not looking to score. And I think this is exactly right. I think this has been a problem with the Bruins power play for a long time with some of the players on that top power play unit. I think it's why Charlie McAvoy is not an ideal point man on a top power play unit, even though I think he's an excellent Norris Trophy caliber defenseman. I just don't think that's a strength of his. And I think it's true. And I think this is probably something that, you know, should have been focused on earlier in the season. But it's good that at least they're getting to it this point before the playoffs start.
Well, it's interesting because you think about like one of the changes Montgomery's implemented, and it's more of an east-west style in the O zone. You know, you're looking more for high danger. Hang on to pucks and high danger chances, which I'm for, you know.
Yeah.
But then when that seeps into the power play and you're not shooting pucks, because he's right, and it's right, they do often, you can see it is like, what's my next play rather than like, oh, do I have a lane to the net? Do I have a, you know, is there a guy in front that can tip it or get a rebound? And I agree with you. I think it should have been dealt with earlier in the season. 5-on-5, though, I'm fine with them trying to go for the best shot. Sure. I know that the people in the balcony don't love it. I've been to a few games this year. I sat in the balcony. And just it's like, shoot, you know. And you know what? Like, there was when I was a little kid, I did the same thing. I'm fine with them looking for the best shots. But I agree with Monty's sentiment on that power play. Shoot the puck.
Yeah, I do too. And, Marchand is another guy that defers a lot. It gets to the point where Pastrnak has to defer because the attention of the entire penalty kill is on him in the one-timer and they go up elsewhere. So, like, there's a counterpoint to it at times when they're overloading on Pastrnak where he does have to look to pass. But I think that's when it becomes incumbent on a lot of the other guys to shoot and become shooting scoring threats so they can't completely overload Pastrnak and try to blanket him with the penalty kill coverage. And a lot of that comes down to McAvoy being proactive and being aggressive with his shot. And, you know, it was what Montgomery was basically saying is that too many times they're in a posture where when the puck is coming to them, they look like they're just going to look to pass. Like the posture stick, the way they're positioned. He said, whereas if the stick is cocked when the pass is coming, or if there's a little bit of a shot fake there, it changes the lanes, it changes the seams, it changes the way the coverage and the way that they're going to cover them and react to them. And, you know, he said it's as simple as doing that sometimes for some of these players to, you know, throw a little bit of deception and to throw the other team off. So I think it's, you know, dead on, and I think it's something like, when you get into certain patterns, I think as a player, you need to be like sort of reminded of that to snap out of it a little bit when you become predictable or you keep doing the same things over and over again. And I think this is one of those situations.
Also, one thing we haven't mentioned is they don't have Patrice Bergeron on the bumper.
Yeah,
that's a big thing, you know, and it's the first year without it. And I think a lot of those guys like Marchand were very used to having him there.
Yep.
And he was a reliable threat just for one time. And he was also someone to cover on the pot. Took a little coverage away from Pastrnak. You know, I think it's also adjusting to that, too. I think that they've had a little difficulty with.
Yep. And we've covered this, but I'm just going to read it because I thought it was an interesting point and it kind of crystallized it pretty well. Michael Wiseman on Facebook said, "Hi, Joe. I know you are of the same opinion, but I don't understand why they keep rolling out 73 on power play one. He is predictable on what he does. Reverse on entry and pass to the elbow in ozone, and it makes the power play ineffective. He has limited creativity and movement and hardly ever shoots. Power play two has been outplaying power play one for several weeks now." And I think that's true. I think the second power play, Brazeau's got a couple of power play goals. Zaka's got a power play goal on power play two. Morgan Geeky has been really effective on power play two.
Yep.
Since the All-Star break, I believe there's been only one power play goal between Marchand and Pastrnak. Either one goal apiece or one goal, that's it between the two of them. It's very limited production that they've had power play-wise since coming back from the All-Star break. And, you know, at a certain point, you got to change things up and you need to see something a little different. I've said this a couple times. And, like, Shattenkirk, I think, is a little more comfortable in a point role on the power play, a little more comfortable, like, shooting at times, especially shooting for rebounds, shooting for tips. We saw one of the goals that Brazeau scored. It was one of those situations. I think also Mason Lowry is a guy that's custom made for the power play point position. Just the plays he makes, the ease he has shooting and looking for his shot and passing. I think there's a couple of other options they could and should be looking at if power play one continues to struggle, potentially replacing McAvoy at the point position on that power play. And, you know, I know it's a delicate line to walk, and I know he's your best defenseman by far. You know, you need him. He plays a ton of minutes. He's a great player. Do you worry about, you know, it bruising the player or affecting the player if you take him off the top power play unit? Because we know how prideful those guys are about playing in all situations and wanting to help the team and all that. And I just wonder, you know, are there reasons beyond simply this is the best guy for this role why you might keep him on the first power play instead of moving him around?
It's an interesting thing, and it's funny because McAvoy's vision is great. Like, if you his passes, his ability to hit Pastrnak, you know, cross zone, things like that are really phenomenal. But there is that little thing that happens when it becomes a 5-on-4 and it's not as fast moving, and you know, you're sort of trying to get the PK out of their structure. I agree with you. I think Lowry would be a really interesting look on that top power play unit. McAvoy is still developing a little bit. I mean, you know, I still think there's more to give, especially for him in his career. I don't think he's hit his ceiling by any means. But you're right. I mean, you know, just moving him back to power play two, like, what does that do? I mean, you could also say, hey, you know, we're going to use you less on the power play so we can use you more in 5-on-5 and PK. And it's going to be more important because you're not using Lowry in a lot of those situations. So, you know, Lowry's going to be a little bit fresher. So there is that element of it, too.
I mean, they did do that eventually with Chara. You know, they moved him off that top power play unit in the point spot that he had been on for a long time. And, you know, part of it was just because it took him so long to, you know, unleash the fury with the slap shot that it would either turn into a block shot going the other way or he wouldn't be able to get the shot off. You know, so they eventually moved to different personnel. And I think, you know, when they went to Krug, it really helped that power play quite a bit. It turned into a much bigger weapon because they had a guy in Krug that could make plays, move with and without the puck, shoot it a lot on net, had a good hard shot, accurate, created things. Like, you know, I think it comes a certain time where you've got to put the players in the right spots, especially power play, playoff time. Everybody's going to be in their best spots that are going to give the team the best chance to win. And it's not about, like, you know, what you've done in the past. It's not about, like, contracts. It's not about egos. It's not about any of that stuff. It's just about putting the best player in the best spot where they can succeed. And, you know, can McAvoy change? Can he become a more of a shoot first mentality at times? I'd love to see it. I don't know. I just don't think that's him. And I think you get into trouble if you start trying to force yourself to do things that aren't natural or, you know, aren't comfortable or aren't you. And, you know, I wonder if you hit that point with McAvoy where that's just not him and you don't want to ask him to be something he's not. But it'll be interesting to see how that develops because I think a power play is going to be a huge factor in the playoffs and they need to get that top power play unit right before the postseason starts. And, you know, there's more to it, obviously, than McAvoy. Marchand has struggled a lot and he struggled in his spot on the half wall. And, you know, Coyle has had good and bad moments in the second half as a lot of the veteran players are as they're, you know, navigating this stretch towards season, trying to get rid of the postseason. So, you know, it's not just him. And I referenced already, like, Pastrnak hasn't exactly been lighting it up with power play goals either. So that whole unit needs to be better than they've been. And that goes without saying.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right. Hey, Hags, I really appreciate your podcast and all the work you, Mick, Evan and all the rest of the crew do every day. Living outside of New England allows me to stay current on hard to find insights and conversations. I love it. So thank you and keep up the good work. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
My question is around the goalie rotation in the playoffs. The obvious scenario to me is to have each goalie play until they lose and then swap. It allows you to ride the hot hand and ensures each goalie has to lose twice in order for a playoff exit. That drives healthy competition and really plays into the brotherly love team mentality that Ullmark and Swayman have. It also takes the guesswork out of it for the coaches and creates an easy to understand and predictable flow. Have you heard any chatter about the strategy? What do you think of it? We've asked multiple times, and that's from all the best Mark McGwire, not the Mark McGwire. would it be a Hall of Fame baseball player if it weren't for the
roids.
Yes. But appreciate it, Mark. I think we've asked the coaches multiple times about the goalie rotation, and they are, you know, they talk a good game that they are willing to do it and, you know, wouldn't be opposed to it and are certainly strongly considering it after it being successful during the regular season of like just going with a straight rotation back and forth or something similar to what Mark is saying, where you keep the guy in there until he loses and then you go with the, you know, the other goalie. And I think that's a pretty fair way to do it. I just don't think fair matters in the playoffs. It comes down to like, you know, what gives the team the best chance to win and what the coaches want to do. And I do think if somebody comes in and starts game one, whether it's Swayman or Ullmark, and I think that's very much up for hotter debate than it was even.
It's up in the air now.
Yeah.
I wasn't before.
But I'm, you know, if a guy wins in game one, I don't think there's any way they're just going to say, you know what, you're not playing game two. We're going to play somebody else. I think going with the guy, if they keep winning, is the way to go.
I agree. I think that it's, you know, I don't think it's going to be a Swayman Ullmark, Swayman Ullmark, Swayman Ullmark, or vice versa. I just don't think that's doable. But what's more doable is, you know, a guy plays two games in a row and it's 1-1 after two games and you're shifting the series to Toronto or Washington or Detroit or whatever. And it's like, all right, you know, let's go with the other guy. Let's see what he's got going into, you know, the road barn. And I think, like, I'm fine with that. And I think it's they're going to have to just kind of trust their gut a little bit more here and trust goalie Bob. And that, you know, if you feel like it's time to make the switch in net, it's nothing personal, you know, and I that's what I want to see. And I don't want to see, as I just said, you know, every other, but use both. And if that's, you know, in a 6-game series, Swayman makes, you know, four of the starts and Ullmark makes two or vice versa. Like if that's what that is, and that's, then I'm fine with that. I just don't want to, I don't want them to ride a guy into the ground because they have not been, they're not accustomed to that workload.
No. And it was interesting. Montgomery was asked the other day about just Swayman in general and whether he feels like he's seeing anything different out of him recently than he had in the first half of the year. You know, the numbers aren't obviously as strong. I think, you know, at times maybe he's given up a goal here or there that he didn't in the first half of the year. I don't know that he's playing as well. But I also think the team has not been playing as, good hockey in front of him defensively. And I think that's factored into it as well. You know, he's still won some of these games where, like, he's made saves when he had to and he gave up four goals in a game or something like that. But what he referenced was, Swayman played both of the games against Toronto and they won 4-1 and he was excellent in both of those games. And he really said he showed us plenty there. Like that's what we wanted to see. Mm-hmm. And I think that may end up allowing him because he played so well against Toronto in those two games and because they won them decisively, no matter what's happening here, he may end up starting game one based on that. And, you know, not completely falling on his face here down the stretch, as long as he, you know, plays adequate and plays close to what he did in the first half. I still think they may go with him in game one of the playoffs, even though Ullmark has clearly played better since the trade deadline and since knowing he's staying in Boston and a weight has been lifted off his shoulders. I still think it's going to be Swayman at the end of the day starting game one because they've given him the big starts most of this year and because he's performed well when they've given him those big responsibility starts.
I think it's going to be really interesting over these next couple of games. Obviously, you know, you have the first game of the 6-game road trip on Saturday against Philly. You've got games against Carolina, Florida, Tampa, Nashville coming up. You know, how do they rotate the goalies through that? I mean, those are all playoff teams. And, you know, they're all road games. And I'm curious, you know, curious if one of them, you know, gets really hot. If Jeremy Swayman kind of reverts back to where he was pre-All-Star break, if Ullmark, you know, kind of shakes off Saturday's game and kind of continued on the pace he was on. And I think getting the goalies right is the most important, because if it continues the way it has, right, where, you know, Ullmark is good in parts, but, you know, yesterday, you know, could have made a save here or there, or yep. Swayman kind of continues to struggle a little bit more than he was before. Yep. And you're going into the playoffs being like, all right, we're going to pick the guy based on how he did against Toronto, like, you know, a month and a half ago. That's not the safest, most comfortable position to be in for your biggest strength you have. And that's my biggest thing. So I think it's going to be interesting over these next, you know, week or two of who kind of how those two develop their seasons. I think it's going to be the biggest thing.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Like I said, I think if it continues the way it is now, I think Swayman's going to start game one. And I think it's based on him playing, you know, the bigger games down the stretch, and just them treating him like he's going to be the number one guy. And it's partially based on Omar's track record in the playoffs. Like, we've seen it a couple times now where he's been excellent in the regular season, and then he turns into a different guy in the postseason to say, okay, I think I've learned my lesson here. I think I know what might happen. So let's see what the other guy does and see if it's any different, and see if a different kind of light switch gets turned on in the playoffs. Because I think we've seen this movie a couple times already. I don't need to see it again to know how it's going to end. You know, I think the track record is there. You know, the biggest thing
with the track record is I don't think he can play a ton of games in a row. That's the biggest thing. And I think that's where the Swayman element comes in. Even if Ullmark was the way better goalie this season, it would still be like, all right, you have Ullmark 1, 2, maybe 3 starts in a row and then switch to Swayman, you know, whereas obviously it's been a different season. But yeah, I agree.
All right. Corey Meyer, this Bruins team is cooked. 14 shots in net in the last 54 minutes of hockey against Flyers. Come out flat after that debacle Thursday night. We'll be lucky to win 2 games in the first round. All right, Corey, I say this, I say this with love, and I say this like I wanted to include this in here because, dude, you need to relax. they have been a very good team all year. They are in a great spot. That is part of the reason you're seeing like a lot of duds being thrown in here, is because they've built up enough of a cushion where they can have duds. And I think, you know, even if they end up in the second spot in the Atlantic Division and they face Toronto in the first round, I think they want that. I think they're okay with that. I think the Bruins are perfectly fine playing the Leafs in the first round of the playoffs if it comes down to that, and saving a potential matchup for Florida until the second round. I don't think this team is cooked. I do think you're seeing some veterans that, you know, are getting ready for the playoffs, frankly, right now. And maybe psychologically you're seeing a team that suffered a lot of injuries towards the end of last year, right before the playoffs, and was banged up, trying to avoid that situation happening this year, and not wanting to, you know, suffer injuries down the stretch, and not wanting to empty the tank in any way, shape, or form in the regular season when they want to have a full tank of gas when the playoffs start. And I think there's enough good veterans on this team that aren't playing to their normal level right now. And I think that's just because of where they are situationally in the year and getting ready for the playoffs. I don't think it's because they're completely gassed or cooked or cashed out and, you know, they're not going to have it and they're just going to be a 4-game sweep for somebody in the first round. I just don't see that happening. And I think, you know, fans around here have a tendency with the Bruins to overreact when the team is in first place and the team has played really well and it's a good team. And, like, you know, you can harp on some certain things, and there are things that could be improved, like the top power play unit, and the goalies could be playing better, and defensively they could be a little more stout, and there's definitely some weaknesses on this team. But at its core, this has been an extremely good team that has performed well this year, and I think we're going to see that in the playoffs.
I think especially when you consider the expectations coming into the season, we've talked about this a lot in the sense that we looked at this as kind of, not a rebuild, but sort of a retool, kind of bridge year to the future. And I think when you consider that, you know, they're in first place and they have, you know, been around first place all season and they're, you know, points wise, one of the best in the NHL. Now, are there holes in this roster? Yes. You know, especially compared to last season where you had a wagon of a team where there were no holes and it was, you know, oh my God, look at this team on paper. Obviously things didn't work out. But I think, you know, are they cooked? No, I expect them to be at least in the second round. Do I think they are true cup contenders? Do I think they're built to beat Carolina over a 7-game series or the Ranger? No, I'm not as confident in that, but that doesn't mean they're cooked. That doesn't mean that you punt. That doesn't mean that, you know, you just sell everybody at the deadline. You know, they're, you know, it's funny because they're high in the standings. I consider them more of a middle of the pack. Don't really know what to fully expect from them playoff team. I could see them out in the first round, but yeah. I could also see them finding a way to go to the cup and win it. Like, and I know people are going to think I'm insane saying that, but that's kind of this team. Like they're, you know, they're a little all over the place in that sense, but they have that potential. They have that potential.
They do. They definitely have the potential. But when I look at them, I see a team that could probably win a round, maybe two, if they really like maximize their potential. But I don't see them going on a 2-month sojourn through the Stanley Cup playoff field and winning the cup when it's all said and done at the end. I just don't think. I think there are too many weaknesses on this roster that can be exploited come playoff time. You know, whether it's, you know, the power play unit not coming through, whether it's the goals that they give up at the worst possible times, especially late in games, their inability to push back against other teams when another team, really a good team, quality team, puts a push on them. You know, there's the center play, winning faceoffs, like different things that I think are going to, when you play good teams in the playoffs, they're going to be able to expose some of your weaknesses. Dealing with a forecheck pressure, like Florida's going to be able to bring that defenseman core is another one. Like there are like three or four things that I think are going to come back and you're going to see in the playoffs that they were really hurting them or came back to haunt them at the wrong time. I think they're good enough to get past a first round opponent. I just think as they get deeper into the playoffs and as they play better, deeper quality teams, those weaknesses are going to get exposed. And they couldn't address all of them at the trade deadline, given the salary cap situation and everything else they have this year. So that's why I've constantly looked at this team and this year as a transition team to what lies this summer and beyond, when they're really able to spend some money, improve the roster, address some of these issues, and then move forward. So I think they're getting the best out of they can potential-wise. I think this will be a fun team to watch in the playoffs. I think they may give us a series win, maybe two, but I don't think they're going to win the cup, and that's okay. Like, I think that's a good step for them, is to go from out in the first round, severe disappointment last year, to building up some young players, getting them some experience, maybe winning a round, and then, you know, starting to go that upward trend again. But the sky is not falling. What was that guy's name? Corey Meyer. Relax, buddy.
No, it's not. I want to add one last thing.
Yeah.
I'll add one last thing. To me, the only way that they actually would go to a cup is if Swayman and Allmark were on
the goalie. That's the only way. Yes.
It's the only way. Realistically, though.
Stereotypical hot goalie. That is the only way it's going to happen.
Realistically, though, I think they're out in round two. I think they should get a series win. You're in first place. You should definitely win a series. I agree with you on all those other points. I think after that, it's a second round exit.
The hot goalie cliche always lives true in the playoffs for every team.
Yes.
Especially a team like the Bruins, where they've gotten excellent goaltending all year. So if that happens by some stretch, like if Swayman goes nuts and turns into a Conn Smythe trophy winning kind of guy, then that changes the equation quite a bit. But like they played great.
I'll give him my hockey East chain if he does
that. He would love that. I think as a proud UMaine guy, I think he would appreciate that. All right, Evan, thank you very much.
Of course.
Let's also thank Prize Picks. It's the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America and the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Instead of battling thousands of other players that could be pros or sharks, simply pick more or less than on 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll right in. You can win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with NBA, NHL, and college basketball entries today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Want to play alongside some of Prize Picks' favorite players like Meek Mill and Sugar Sean O'Malley? Who the hell is Sugar Sean O'Malley? Do we know?
I think he's a. I want to say he's like a UFC fighter.
Okay, because I know Meek Mill is buddies with Robert Kraft. That one,
yes.
You can now find community plays under the promo tab of the app to view entries from some of the biggest names in the Prize Picks community each week. So definitely get involved. It's fun and pretty simple. Download the Prize Picks app today and use the code CLNS for a first deposit match of up to $100. That is download. There it is. Evan's got
this,
it. The
Prize This is Sugar Sean O'Malley.
There he is. He is the UFC guy. You were right. Download the Prize Picks app today and use the code CLNS for a first deposit match of up to $100. And you can give Sugar Sean O'Malley a beatdown in the daily fantasy sports game. What would be better than that? Thank you, Prize Picks, for making that happen. You are making dreams come true out there. We love you. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. So get on the Prize Picks train. Evan Marinovsky, thank you very much, buddy.
Thank you.
Go wear that chain for the rest of the day with pride, will you?
The rest of the week.
Everybody out there, thanks for listening. We'll see you at the rink.